late last night, the European Central Bank officials were said to be considering cutting their monthly bond buying, but at least half starting in January. This was reported by Bloomberg News. And the reaction to this is sort of surprising because you think, okay, the ECB is tapering its stimulus. People would sell their bonds, their German government bonds. What do they do? They bought. Here to explain why and what this means about the great central bank unwind going forward is Scott Kimball, portfolio manager of the BMO TCH Core Plus Bond Fund, which trades under the ticker MCBIX. And he joins us here in our 1130 studio. Scott, I don't know if this can't get people to sell their government bonds. What will?
Well, that's first of all, thank you for having me. And just to chime in on what you were talking about there with the ECB, you know, Chairman Draghi coming out and talking about reducing the quantitative easing program, it comes with really two different lenses you have to look through it. One is the view of what that means inherently for the bond market, which is if people are holding on to German bonds, Spanish debt, Italian debt, and expecting that the ECB is going to come in and purchase those securities from them, over the near term, then they could be potentially disappointed in the fact that they've come out and said, well, we're going to continue buying, but not quite as much, which should, in theory, put pressure on the spreads between those to move higher and rates to move higher accordingly. What happened is that we saw investors come in and actually begin purchasing bonds again today very strongly at a faster pace, which we interpret as meaning that while the ECB is reducing the overall size of the program, the investors are still betting that it's going to continue further on into the future and that the ECB is rather just sort of keeping pace with what the Fed and other central banks are doing in that they're not taking away the punch bowl entirely. There's still a lot of reasons why liquidity needs to remain very high in these economies, but they're just taking some of the sugar out of it. We've seen a very strong recovery throughout certainly the U.S. From our cycle, Japan, we've seen the equity market over there come to life, and we're seeing that European data has been strong. So this is probably a fairly appropriate step from the ECB, but we don't anticipate that they're going to be exiting this bond buying program in the intermediate term, which is why we think you saw investors come in and sort of reassert their position.
Hey, Scott, I just wondering, maybe there's a third possibility, and this could then we get into some talk about what's in the your portfolio. But all right, let's say that rates do rise, if they ever do rise in Europe. That's going to make the new bonds more expensive. And if you are an investor rather than a speculator, I mean, has anyone ever really gotten fired because, you know, they missed 25 basis points or 50 basis points over a 30-year or a 20-year period? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and sell your whole insurance portfolio of government bonds because, you know, oh, I could get 25 basis points more?
I think you bring up an important point, and that's really something that's kind of been in the heart of our positioning in the Core Plus Fund, which is that when you look at what's going on in the world and what these banks have engineered, it's a world where there is awash with cash. Insurance companies in particular, you know, is a very important name that you brought up, is the insurance industry. They have gigantic pools of cash and very long dated liabilities. There's a bigger risk to them misstepping on the liability management side than missing 25 or 50 basis points on interest rates. So we would be complete agreement with that.
Okay, so then I want you to follow up on what's in the portfolio and how you construct your portfolio of the Core Plus Bond Fund. Because one of the things that I note when I look at it, you got a lot of floating rate debt.
Absolutely. And that floating rate debt is a structural opportunity for us to position Core Plus Fund and really any of our strategies to take advantage of different segments of the bond market. What we do is look for bottom-up value across the entire spectrum of fixed income and say, where are there structural inefficiencies? One inefficiency that we noticed that went back really about 12 to 18 months was that LIBOR and the Fed funds rate were sort of behaving counterintuitively to what you'd anticipate from a rising Fed. So that meant that floating rate notes were very cheap. You could buy these are interest rate bond instruments, just like any other corporate bond. And when rates rise, their coupon rises. So their sensitivity to rates is not particularly strong, which we thought was very important for protecting the dollars we had invested on the front end.
And we're talking about companies like Abbott Labs, eBay, Daimler Finance, IBM, Kraft Heinz, Activision, Blizzard. I mean, those are the kind of corporate names we're talking about with some of this floating rate debt.
Absolutely. So when we use when we look at the Core Plus Fund and decide where we want to take risk and how we want to budget risk, that is a pocket, the floating rate notes, the front end, the shorter dated securities, where we're looking for a lot of liquidity and we're not looking for credit headaches. So we use a lot of high quality companies whose equity prices have given their balance sheets a tremendous cushion.
Is there anything that you're avoiding?
Certainly. So when we look at where we are in the credit cycle, we keep hearing that referenced by constituents, investors, fund managers. The word credit cycle, the term credit cycle, keeps getting used. Our opinion is that we're in the seventh inning stretch, and take me out to the ball game keeps playing on repeat. And that's exactly what central banks have engineered. So what we're looking at is trying to balance the idea that risk probably still does well for the next 12 months, but at the same time, keeping the powder dry to take advantage of some opportunities that might be created in, let's say, for example, high-yield bonds. Our allocation to high-yield bonds, as that sector has outperformed, has been trimmed back with the anticipation that as we're not getting paid as much to own it, maybe we can raise some liquidity, and in the event there's a market disruption, we could jump in and buy some yields.
What are you buying for yield then? Are you buying emerging markets?
We're not buying emerging market debt. We've been focused primarily in moving a little further out the yield curve and investment grade, where we're willing to take a little more duration. At this point, we think that interest rates have been pretty subdued, and that when we look at the corporate bond market, we see dislocations occur that don't make a lot of sense. So one example I would give you is, you know, Amazon buys Whole Foods and the debt of Kroger Corporation sells off. We think that might be unjustified. We jump in and we lock in the yields at higher rates than they were the day before.
So it sounds like you're expecting a flatter yield curve.
I think that it's consistent with the Fed rhetoric and the Fed action that the yield curve continues to flatten some, but we do think that the Fed is very conscious of what the potential precursor could be if the yield curve were to invert. So we think that a flatter yield curve, but a very incremental Fed as it flattens.
And year to date, the fund is up a little bit more than 4%, and you're getting, what, like a 2.9 to 3% yield on the payout. One of the things I want to ask you about has to do with the way in which you construct your portfolio, because I notice, you know, you're buying in very specific lots. You know, you're buying 20,000 here, 15,000 there. How do you organize? I mean, you're going to buy the same amount of Fannie Mae paper as you would eBay floating rate paper. Or is it just inventory? What's available?
It really reflects where we want the overall risk and return profile of the fund to be. One thing you'll notice about the Core Plus Fund relative to perhaps others is that we don't carry thousands of securities. We have 250 individual line items. So we really have a thorough understanding of this bond adds value. There's a value proposition. We own the security, and we own it an amount that reconciles the way we expect the portfolio to perform in various scenarios. Your ability to do that gets heavily diluted if you have too many individual line items.
And just quickly, give you 10 seconds. Cash, you got about 4.5% of cash. Going to just keep it there?
Cash is really a residual of what we do, and that reflects the fact that we do think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities. We have 96% of our fund invested, but we have a little bit there for those really unique opportunities to come along.
All right. Just as you said, those floating rate notes about 12 to 18 months ago. Thanks very much for being here. Scott Kimball, always a pleasure. Portfolio manager of the BMO TCH Core Plus Bond Fund, symbol MC, BIX, MCBIX.